Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. It's the third and final week now of our April series, Reefer Managed, where we cover all things weed through this Friday, April 19th, ahead of our three-hour national call-in this Saturday, 4:20, called Ask a Legal State. Now, about that program, I'll be co-hosting from noon to 3 with Anne-Marie Awad from the Legal State of Colorado, and we'll see what we can learn around here, good, bad, or mixed, from the experience of the 10 states ahead of us on this. That'll be Saturday, this Saturday, from noon to 3 here on WNYC and on public radio stations across the country, including in many legal states. Now, of all the reasons to legalize marijuana, it's the tax revenue expectations that have probably united more factions around the idea than any other thing, maybe that and social justice. According to a study from New Frontier Data, a data analytics firm focused on the cannabis industry, nationwide legalization would create about $132 billion in tax revenue. But with the illicit cannabis industry still thriving across the country, are New Yorkers and New Jerseyans going to pay more for weed because it'll be taxed when obviously black market weed is not, if it becomes legal? So joining me now to discuss cannabis and taxes, today's topic, is Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy at NYU, author of the book, Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know, and he was a consultant to the state of Washington in their legalization process. Hi, Mark. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, it's always a pleasure to be on with you.
And in your book, Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know, you break down the three main ways in which cannabis gets taxed. What have the 10 legal states done so far?
They've used a mix of what I think of as the two bad methods, which are taxation by price and taxation by weight. Nobody yet has moved to what I think is the appropriate method, which is taxation by THC content. But before we get into that in detail, listening to your intro, $132 billion in tax revenue, what have they been smoking?
And I don't know over what time period.
Completely
that's
a ridiculous number.
I don't know if that's supposed to be per year or per, over 10 years. I don't actually know what that refers to.
It's not going to be that much.
Yeah. Well,
the annual market's about $50 billion. It will be a much smaller market once it's legal because it'll be much cheaper.
And one of the things that we've seen in the news, I'll jump right into this part of it, is that California has seen projected tax revenue fall short of the revenue goals that then-Governor Jerry Brown had set when recreational legalization began in January of last year. Can you talk about the California experience?
I haven't been following California very closely. My impression is what's happening is the industry is starting very slowly. And that's not uncommon. Post-legalization, there's usually a shortage of legal product. And the result is that the illicit market grows slowly, though at high prices, for a year or two. And then everybody crowds in and the prices collapse.
And according to the LA Times, here are the numbers. Based on taxes collected since January 1st, the state is expected to bring in $471 million in revenue this fiscal year, much less than the $630 million projected in the governor's budget. And according to Forbes, as far as the reason, the cost of cannabis in many parts of California has risen to between $15 and $25 a gram in the recreational industry's first quarter last year. By contrast, in nearby legal states Colorado, Washington, and Oregon, you can get a gram for between $1 and $3. That's so much less than $15 to $25 a gram in California.
The same thing happened in Washington and Colorado.
Meaning?
When you open the stores, that's relatively quick. But think about it. You've got to license the growers. They then have to grow and dry the weed. So you can have stores open before there's legal supply for them. So day one, there's a huge shortage. and the stores charge what they can get. It was $30 a gram in Washington on day one. And you know, over time, the supply catches up and the price collapses. $1 to $3 a gram is Oregon. Oregon has completely gone crazy. They didn't put any limits on production.
Mm-hmm.
You can't give. They've got a million pounds of unsaleable pot in a state with 3 million residents.
Huh. So they're growing more than the market requires, and therefore what? The price goes way down?
The price goes way down.
And therefore the tax revenues go way down.
Therefore the tax revenues go way down, precisely. California's having the opposite problem, which is the prices in the legal market are so high and the supply is so limited that people are still buying illegally. If I were California, I would not be concerned about this at all. The notion that you could guess first-year tax revenues to within better than plus or minus 50% is a joke.
Yeah, and it's still a lot of money. If they're going to get $470 million in tax revenue in one fiscal year, yeah, that's less than the $630 million that the budget originally projected, but that's still like $500 million in one year.
Yeah, and it'll be more. But to look at it the other way, the California General Fund budget is $130 billion. So you're looking at less than 0.5% of state revenues.
Right.
So this is not a fix for a state's fiscal problems.
Which also means
any more than lotteries were.
Yeah. So for people who think, wow, this is how we're going to fix criminal justice, or this is how we're going to fix the MTA, part of the New York money, if they do legalize it, is supposed to go to the MTA, then it's not a silver bullet. It's just a little extra money.
Yeah, it'll be worth a couple of $1 billion a year to New York State.
Yeah, which you know, again, it's something.
Right.
But all the other reasons have to line up. People won't really want to do this just for the tax revenue unless they think it's good for the world or good for the people of New York or New Jersey for other reasons as well. I want to get back to the three different ways of taxing legal recreational marijuana and why you think one is good and two are bad. Again, they are taxing by weight, which is what New Jersey is proposing, $42 an ounce. Taxing by dollar value, you know, a percentage of the money that you pay. Or the one you like, taxing by THC content. Why do you like that one the best?
Well, people aren't buying plant matter. They're buying intoxication. And so the appropriate tax base is the intoxicant. If you tax by price, the tax goes to zero as the price goes to zero. And the market price of weed is going to be extremely low, right? It's a little bit of dried plant matter. Mm-hmm. So is tea.
Mm-hmm.
I bought fancy tea at Fairway the other day. Paid 4 cents a gram.
And you didn't pay $42 an ounce in taxes.
And I didn't pay $42. So it's basically the price of cannabis in market equilibrium, unless there's supply restriction by the state, is going to be epsilon plus tax.
Right. Is that to say that the state, you prefer this because the states are going to take in the most tax revenue that way?
Well, they'll take in some tax revenue, but more important, my view of the role of taxation is not to raise revenue. It's to keep the price high enough so that legal cannabis doesn't get to be a public health menace.
Huh.
Cannabis at its illegal price is already by far the most cost-effective intoxicant. Cannabis intoxication will cost you about $1 an hour.
Right. So pot on the street is
much
cheap.
Much cheaper than beer. Right? I see no benefit in letting that go down. If you're a once-a-week smoker, you don't care what it costs. Right? The Doritos cost more than the weed anyway.
Uh-huh.
If you're a heavy smoker, you care. But we should care that you smoke less. So raising cannabis prices up to the level where it's still competing with the black market, but not above that, seems to be a no-brainer.
I guess cigarettes are taxed that way that they've gone, the cigarette taxes have been raised so high, really for the sake of discouraging use, and then, oh, by the way, it provides a stream of revenue for the governments.
Exactly.
What about alcohol?
Alcohol is more or less taxed by alcohol content. So whiskey, distilled spirits, are explicitly taxed by the proof gallon. Straightforward. Beer and wine are taxed categorically, but the taxes on those two categories reflect their alcohol content more or less. Wine is undertaxed.
Do you think that the taxes on alcohol do anything to discourage abuse, which is what you're hoping the marijuana taxes will do?
Absolutely. I mean, Phil Cook has at Duke has done the numbers. You raise alcohol prices by 10%, which would be pretty much tripling alcohol taxes. Doubling alcohol taxes. Raise alcohol prices by 10%. Violent crime goes down by 3%. It's the most obvious, simple, painless crime control mechanism we have, and we're not doing it.
Fascinating. We're talking to Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy at NYU and author of Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know. This is part of our April series, Reefer Managed. Our topic today is legal recreational marijuana and taxation. And we can take some phone calls for Professor Kleiman at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we'll continue right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we are in our series for the month of April, Reefer Managed, covering all things weed. Don't forget, this Saturday we will have a three-hour national call-in on this called Ask a Legal State, where people from around here, New York and New Jersey, where they're actively considering it, can ask people from Colorado and Washington and Oregon and California and Massachusetts that all have legal recreational marijuana about their experiences in various aspects of it, taxation and a lot of other things. For today on the local show, just here on WNYC, we're talking about taxes and legal weed with Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy at NYU, author of the book Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know. And he was also a consultant to the state of Washington in their legalization process. And Matt in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Matt.
Oh, hi. Let me take you.
Yes. I just wanted to call because I was looking at, considering what he was talking about, the revenue involved. And I'm doing my federal taxes as we speak, as I was listening to your show.
Good to the last drop of deadline time, right, Matt?
To all the costs associated with illegal marijuana, like prisons, law enforcement, et cetera. And also, if it were legal, people pay sales tax. Employees who work in the industry pay sales tax, income tax, et cetera. So if you look at the total benefit to society, the financial benefit, it's far beyond the tax revenue.
Thank you. Mark, have you crunched numbers like that?
I haven't. Notice there's an assumption in there that the money that's being spent on cannabis wouldn't have been spent on something else, that the jobs created in cannabis wouldn't have been created selling food instead, which is not obviously correct. There certainly are some law enforcement savings. Not a lot on the prison side, but considerable on the police side. But those aren't dollar savings. That's just reallocating police resources away from cannabis to something else.
We mentioned the New Jersey proposal to tax at $42 an ounce. From what I'm seeing of the New York proposal from the governor, it's more complicated. It includes a cultivation tax of $1 per dry weight gram of cannabis flowers and 25 cents per dry weight gram of cannabis trim, which we won't go into what trim is. An earlier Cuomo proposal would also levy a 20% state tax on cannabis when it's sold from wholesaler to retailer. And there was a third tax in Cuomo's proposal, 2%, to go to the county where the dispensary is located. And I don't know, that sounds complicated. How does that fit into your formulation of the three main ways of taxing legal pot?
It's basically a price tax, and I think that has disadvantages. Now, I was
price tax. In other words, they're basic. They're taxing. They would be taxing under that system based on how much money you spent.
Right. On the other hand, there is at least some discussion of taking a different approach to controlling problem use, which is minimum unit pricing. This is something Scotland has done for alcohol. Simply say you can't sell alcohol at less than so much, so many dollars or shillings, whatever, per gram of absolute alcohol. And if you do that, then a price-based tax turns into a weight-based tax, or into a THC-based tax. So there are lots of ways to skin the cat.
Amanda in Long Island City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, good morning. So my question is with respect to imposing what appears to be, or what seems to be a highly regressive skin tax on marijuana if we do tax by THC content as opposed to, I don't know, weight or some other metric. I mean, don't we already do that? And you mentioned with cigarettes. Is it true that we've decreased cigarette usage, or really have we just created, especially in NYC, a booming black market for cigarettes still? And I don't know, is there data that the cigarette usage has gone down and there's not a booming black market for that?
I think the data is clear that over the last 50 years, since the first Surgeon General reports came out about the links between cigarettes and lung cancer and then all kinds of other diseases, tobacco use has gone way down in this country. Mark, that's right, isn't it?
Oh, it's the most spectacular public health victory of my lifetime.
And then I guess...
taxation's a part of it. Only a part of it, but a substantial part of it.
Well, I guess that really is Amanda's question. How much has taxation contributed to that?
A lot. I mean, cigarette consumption is price sensitive. Less than I thought. I mean, if you told me that cigarettes are going to sell for $13 a pack in New York, I'd say, look, nobody's going to buy them except people who are currently addicted. And that's not true. As to the black market in cigarettes, that's a complicated story. There's very little illicit cigarette production. What exists is interstate smuggling to take advantage of tax differentials. So illegal cigarettes in New York are legal cigarettes from Virginia that are smuggled up because the tax differential is $8 a pack. And so you can make several million dollars driving a truck from Alexandria to the Bronx.
A friend of mine told me that her local bodega sells packs of cigarettes with a North Carolina stamp on them. Does that mean they can actually sell for less in New York than the cigarettes at the next bodega down the block that have a New York stamp?
Not legally. I mean, those cigarettes are completely illegal. It's the same thing from Virginia, except a little further along. No, it's a completely illegal activity. And in fact, if you walked into that store, you'd probably get full-price cigarettes.
Yeah, in fact.
The locals get the discount.
What my friend, who I guess is a local, told me is that there is a discount. It's $9 a pack as opposed to like 15 down the block. But
Now let's apply this to cannabis.
Please.
So New York, about half the cigarettes sold in New York City have not been taxed in New York City. So that's a very substantial black market. Again, at an $8 a pack price differential. A pack of cigarettes conveniently weighs just exactly an ounce. So we can't collect $8 an ounce without having a massive illicit market.
Mm.
We need nationally uniform taxation. And that's the reason the state-by-state process, I think, is a catastrophe.
And we're pretty far from that, given that so many states are going in different directions, legalizing or not legalizing, and of course it's federally illegal, and that's... We're pretty far from federal legalization that would allow a uniform tax system, right?
That's the reason I have argued that as a public health advocate, I want national legalization yesterday. When the argument against legalization is, well, you need to defend the public health from this new industry, and you do, but I think you'll defend it better if it's legal nationally and regulated nationally than this crazy state-by-state thing with a $50 billion a year illicit market.
Because there would be higher taxation, which would discourage more people from using or abusing.
Exactly.
But the other point that the caller was making, Amanda in Long Island City, is that it's a regressive tax. If you place a higher tax on a higher THC content, tax by high, basically, then it's a regressive tax, and you're going to drive poorer people to the black market, which I'll add could make, you know, leave them at risk as they are today for other reasons, more at risk than wealthier people, of being put into the criminal justice system for their cannabis use.
All right, several things. I don't think anybody's planning to criminalize the possession of untaxed pot. I mean, maybe they are. I haven't seen that. Second, you clearly want to keep the legal price below the illegal price. But the illegal price of illegal weed in New York City is $10 to $15 a gram. Legal stuff in Washington, Colorado goes for about $6 a gram, though there are discounts from that. Oregon is $40 an ounce, right? So $2 a gram. So it's not hard to wipe out the illicit market. Question is, how much below the illicit price you're going to let the legal price drop? As to regressivity, almost any consumption tax is regressive. But as we said earlier, this is going to be 1 or 2% of state revenue. So if you wanted to make the state's tax system more progressive, change the income tax. This will not be a substantial contributor to income distribution one way or the other.
We're talking about legal marijuana and taxation as part of our April Reefer Managed series with Mark Kleiman, author of the book Marijuana Legalization, and Brian in Nyack. You're on WNYC. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
Can hear fine.
Okay. My question is not so much a tax question. Maybe you heard it. I heard this on one of your previous NPR shows. The sellers are having a hard day. It has to be a cash business only. There, no banks will do business with them. And they have to hire armored cars to move the money around. Have you heard anything about that? I mean, that was amazing because you're selling all the millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Right. And that the reason for that is marijuana is still federally prohibited, as we were just mentioning, which means banks are not depositing pot proceeds. So, Mark, how can states tax something that can't be deposited into a traditional bank? How do they even know how much tax each dispensary, let's say, owes?
Oh, well, the dispensaries are required to keep records as part of their cannabis license. And many states have relatively sophisticated inventory control systems that make it hard to fool around. But the cash only thing is really is a problem for the states. I mean, Washington State gets armored car deliveries of cash in payment of tax
from legal marijuana businesses.
Now, some of them have worked out banking solutions. It's not actually illegal for the banks to do business with cannabis stores. And the Treasury, under the Obama administration, actually issued guidance on how the banks could do it within the law. But they're still nervous.
Yeah.
And I think it's the case that while the Treasury is okay with it, the bank regulating agencies are nervous about it. So you get your quarterly visit from the Office of Comptroller of the Currency if you're a federally chartered national bank. And the inspector says, you don't want to be doing business with cannabis. And so the store gets a letter saying, we're firing you as a customer.
A last thing before we run out of time. On the tax expenditure side, you've given us some numbers that indicate that it's not going to be transformative for any state's budget. It's going to be a tiny fraction, even, you know, if it's hundreds of millions of dollars, as Governor Cuomo projects per year in New York State. The New York State budget is something like $170 billion per year. So it's certainly under 1% of all tax revenues. Do you see in the legal states officials having overpromised what the new taxes can do, whether it's for the MTA as here or however else it's being allocated with some kind of promise of public good from the tax revenue? Do you see a political problem for legal marijuana in that the ultimate effect of the tax revenue collected is underwhelming?
Well, it's not the elected officials who've been overpromising. It's the advocates pushing the initiatives. Remember, none of this has been done by legislation. These are all initiatives. Not a single state has actually moved cannabis legalization through the legislature.
Right. New York and New Jersey would be the first.
Would be the first. I think probably Illinois is going to beat us to the punch.
Maybe Vermont, right?
Maybe Vermont. And, you know, if Vermont does it, they'll probably do it in a sensible way. But the problem is, if Vermont does it in a sensible way, and New York legalizes in a less restrictive way, then this stuff's going to flow across the border.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really, look, there's a commerce clause in the Constitution for a reason. This is not well handled on a state-by-state basis. And so far, the cannabis advocates have gotten away with overpromising absolutely everything. And nobody calls them on it.
Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy at NYU, author of the book, Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know. Mark, thank you very, very much.
Brian, it's been great.
And our Reefer Managed series continues tomorrow and all this week here on The Brian Lehrer Show. Coming up next, Valerie Jarrett, former senior advisor to President Obama. Stay with us.